VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Welcome to The Game Podcast, the 93rd minute winner of football podcasts. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and today I'm joined by Alison Rudd, Julian Lawrence, and broadcasting from somewhere near Clark Carlisle's house, it's Ollie Kay. Right, plenty of football going on, football daily, football coming out of our ears and noses, so let's start, therefore, at Craven Cottage. Alison, I want to start with you because of your proximity to Fulham, geographic proximity. We're going to get into Wenger being unhappy and all this stuff, but I looked at this and I've seen Fulham in person twice in the last month, and they're pretty good, aren't they?
Oh, I thought they were spectacular against Arsenal. Even though the stats bore out that Arsenal were the better team in the first half in terms of shots produced, I still thought in the first half Fulham were the close control, particularly of Dembele and Brian Ruiz, is just very, very watchable. And then in the second half, you could have been watching. So yeah, any top European side having a go, they were patient. It was, people were drooling about Arsenal's first half performance. I didn't think it was that particularly eye catching. I thought the team of the day was Fulham, and if they had not got those late goals, it would have been totally unfair. I was really impressed, and I think Martignol. I'm surprised in a way, because there's always been this tradition at Fulham to try and to be very neat, and he's gone for that neatness with flair. It was lovely, and if you were just arriving in Britain looking for a team to support, you wouldn't have latched onto Arsenal, you'd have latched onto Fulham.
Ollie, is that a bit harsh?
Talking about Fulham, I thought they were. I mean, the second half performance in particular was excellent, as Alison said. I think they've been really fairly unimpressive the first few months under Martignol. I thought they were dire against Manchester United a few weeks ago, but that was the sign of a team that can be competitive in the second half of the season, and maybe it will take maybe it has taken time for Yol to get his message across, to get players where he wants them, etc. And maybe it'll, maybe we can expect them to be an inconsistent team. But to me, that team has potentially more going for it than Roy Hodgson's team. I think there's a bit more flair now with Dembele and Ruiz. If they can keep hold of their better, experienced players, Zamora, Murphy, etc., I see no reason why they can't be a top half team again.
Well, but Ollie, tactically, I want to get this for you. What strikes me about Fulham is. That, I know Danny Murphy sits in front of the back four, but he's old and he's a passer. Mm-hmm. Why isn't there like a proper holding midfielder on this team? Is this like you all suddenly said, hey, I'll go and play all these guys, Dembele and Ruiz and Dempsey, who are all skillful, instead of, and we're going to play football that way, instead of having, the ritual destroyer in midfield?
Well, not every team plays with that type of player. They play with Murphy in front of the back four, and they play with Sidwell generally sort of bombing on and boxing.
It was a bit
box.
Different, obviously. You had Sidwell in there, so you had the one hacker last night. But they've also, it, generally speaking, it's kind of pleasant and positive, right?
Yeah, but I don't think
there's no Sean Dery's in there. That's
no, exactly. But there are a lot of teams playing similar way in the Premier League this season. I would say that this season's Premier League has probably been notable for lack of or relative absence or influence of destructive type players. And I think, you know, Chelsea have generally played without one. Man United have played without one. Arsenal. You could say Song is, but he's not really a destroyer, is he? So it's I don't know. It seems like that player is in fairly short supply at the moment.
Julian, I don't want to get into debate with Song, but I would argue that though he's somebody who's in there primarily for his defensive capabilities, who can also play and who's sort of been groomed that way, whereas, you know, Murphy perhaps slightly different player. But talking some Arsenal, Wenger very unhappy with the referee Lee Probert. Is it a case where he thought his team played great and the episodes went against him, and so Arsene's angry?
I think he was probably angry at the players. And obviously then he couldn't blame them publicly probably, so he blamed the ref. I think the ref got the penalty wrong. But then for Arsene to come out and say that the second yellow card from Giroud was actually a foul on Giroud by Zamora was a bit too much in my opinion. But we know that Wenger is used to sometimes doing things like that after games. You know, he felt harshly done by. But I don't know. Like Alisson said, I think Fulham deserve probably definitely more than a defeat, probably more than a draw as well. And I think they've exposed the problems Arsenal have at the moment at the back, especially at 11 against 10, you know. And it's really difficult for Arsenal when you've got no fullbacks, when you've got Jon Cochrane playing at left back, then Skilacci coming on. I don't understand why Wenger didn't put Koscielny at right back and Skilacci in the centre. I think it could have made a hell of a difference in the game.
Well, obviously the fullbacks is part of it, but one of the things which struck me is and Ollie, you'd weigh in on this, was Arsenal. It's rare to see Arsenal have less possession than the opposition. And obviously the sending off had something to do with it. But I think those final numbers, Fulham had 55% of the ball. Yeah. Is there an evolution or a change in the way Arsenal are, or not evolution, it has positive connotations, but is there let's say, a shift in the way Arsenal are playing? Or is this just happenstance?
Well, Arteta has certainly meant that they've had a passing presence in the middle of the park this season. But I think any team that loses Fabregas and Nasri and has for the season so far been without Wilshere, I think they're going to be they are going to sort of control games with possession less than they did before. I think that's fairly inevitable, but I mean, you look at that team yesterday. They didn't have players who were comfortable on the ball as fullbacks in terms of playing at fullback, and they don't really. You know, it's a different type of team. I think Arsenal have had to grind out results a little bit more this season, partly because of the absentees, partly because they've got a new look team, and partly because you know, of the players they've lost. But I think they've generally done well. But they're a team in transition, and like many of the other transit teams in transition at the top of the at the top end of the table, they've lost matches.
There's an awful lot of floated balls from Ramsey over the top into the feet of fast players at Arsenal, which is, I think, the shift. Mm. And if you do that, you're going to lose possession. You're going to lose possession.
Is it also Gervinho and Walcott, perhaps different types of players than the wide players they've had before?
Well, it's all, I mean, that's Arsenal's asset, isn't it? It's pace. So you're going to exploit it by being a bit poncy in the middle. You're not going to exploit it so much. It's been reasonably effective. I think it's probably what dug them out of the hole they were in September.
But so, given that Wenger signed Gervinho, was this his idea? Is this part of something? Does he now believe in more direct wingers rather than ball-playing wingers?
Yeah, I would think so, definitely. I think in his mind, it was a more balanced football. I think when Diaby finally and Wilshere will come back, then you'll have a bit of both. You'll have the pace up front, and you'll have the players who are probably more capable of that bouncy in the middle.
So on the Diaby point, as I know you speak to him, I really liked him when he was a footballer, but before, when he was playing before. But What's the deal? I mean, how does somebody get injured and then just kind of disappear forever? And why is it that nobody, funny thing, he's not just one of those guys who's injured, but you never talk about him. Nobody ever speaks about him. He was a French international, right? We're reminded every week that Wilshire's out, but there's never any mention of Diaby. Is it? Are you the only one who... Are the two of us the only ones who rate him? Or?
No. Listen, it's been a very frustrating season for him, I think. Because
like last year?
Yeah. More than last year. He had that great season where he went, you know, with no injuries at all. And then, you know, he had those setbacks. Basically, he had another injury. He had another surgery on his ankle in the summer in June. That's the fourth. And he's only 25. You know, and when you were 25 and you had four surgery on your ankle, it's really not good. It's all down to that tackle against Sunderland in 2005 by that guy called Smith, who's never played football again. And thank God for that. Because since that...
That guy called Smith. There's lots of people called Smith.
Yeah, sorry. He used to play for Sunderland at the time and who broke his ankle on a single tackle at Highbury at the time. And since then, his body never responded to the surgery and to the fracture of the ankle. And since then, I think he will have always troubles with his calf, with his hamstring and all things like that. And it's a tough time for him. You know, I know some of the fans, you know, don't believe in him anymore, and loads of people as well have given up on him probably, but it's a tough time for him. He's an amazing player when he's fit, trust me. It's just that, you know, it's not... There's something missing for him at the moment, fitness-wise, and unless he sort that out with Arsenal, with their medical staff, you know, he will never be 100% again, and that's a real shame.
So make a prediction then for us. When will we see him on a pitch again?
I spoke to him on New Year's Eve.
Oh, they must be really close if you speak on
New
Year's
Eve. No, sorry.
We don't call it New Year's Eve, we call it Fergie's birthday.
Sorry. On Fergie's 70th birthday, I spoke to Abu. He's still not back on the pitch running. He's still with the physios and, you know, in the medical room. It's probably another 2 weeks, and then he'll have to, you know, do a bit of fitness again. I don't know, maybe 3 to 4 weeks before he comes back, which is a shame because we're almost the end of the season. But I really feel for him, and not because he's my friend. It's really hard.
Oh, that's so sweet. Funny, go on YouTube and you can find Abu Diaby and Hatem Ben Arfa when they're like sort of 13 years old at Clairefontaine, getting into this huge argument, and Diaby kind of like locks Ben Arfa out on the balcony and so on. And it's kind of...
They're best friends now.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. But it's just very, very funny. It's real. Ollie, Thierry Henry coming back. Are you on board with this?
I am as a short term option. I can't see a downside in it really. I mean, as long as Henry accepts that he's not the player that he was, that Arsenal is not going to be built around him like it once was, and that Van Persie is the main man, and that his job will be to sort of appear here and there and try and lighten the load on Van Persie. As long as he has the humility to accept that, then I think he will. I think he'll enjoy himself. Arsenal will get some benefit out of it.
I mean, as you know, Ollie, he has the humility to play with Luke Rogers in MLS. So I'm.
But that would suit him in a way because he's the main man in that
right.
team.
And,
you know, he loves everything. You know, he loves being a superstar. He loved being a superstar first time around at Arsenal, and he was brilliant at it. Now he's in a very sort of rare position for him where he's almost going to be a water carrier for a guy like Van Persie, who's been one of the best players in the world this year or last year. And you know, that is the only reason why it wouldn't work short term, is if he can't adjust to it, and if Arsenal can't adjust to having him around. I think if it's a case of him playing, you know, starting 3 or 4 games, coming off the bench in 5 or 6 others, and chipping in every now and then, I can't see a problem with that. Why shouldn't it work?
Final point, just because we haven't picked on Lee Probert, so I'm going to leave this all to you, qualified referee here. does Wenger have a point in having a go at Probert, or should he just shut up? Is it a little bit, as Julian said, like he can't criticise his own player, so he criticises the referee?
I don't know. I was surprised. I mean, Wenger's spent many, many years criticising referees when his own players have been at fault. He does have a small point, Wenger, in that there could have been a penalty awarded to Gervinho early on. But I wouldn't blame the referee, because Gervinho's action, having had his run blocked, was not, it didn't match the foul, if there was a foul. It seemed overdone. So I think you can let most referees off for thinking that didn't look right, I won't give it.
I just think in general the refereeing has been terrible over this last 10 days, and I think people talk about the footballers needing a break and so on. Maybe it's these referees, maybe they need more referees.
Well,
different
referees. I've seen Lee Probert's face more than anyone else's face in football over the past 2 weeks, so he's been very busy.
Yeah, no, I'm not picking on Lee Probert. I don't think he was terrible here. I think there've been some really terrible referees, and he's not one of them. I think. Moving on, speaking of referees who maybe weren't that good and whose mistakes in good faith impacted the outcome of games, Wolves and Chelsea. I guess if you're, Ollie, if you're Village Boas, you've been unlucky. You might feel you've been unlucky. You might feel that, you know, things have conspired against you. Is it fair to say that at Molineux, things conspired in Chelsea's favour?
Yeah, it is, because I think most people would look at the Lampard challenge in the first half and say he should have been sent off, and would be sent off probably 8-9 times out of 10, despite being Frank Lampard and despite, you know, being a player who might get the benefit of the doubt in those situations more often than not. But I mean, for him to be on, still on for 90 minutes and to score the goal, the winning goal so late on, is, you know, that must have been particularly gut-wrenching for Mick McCarthy, who's obviously had his own complaints about referees in the past few days. But it's, you know, it is swings and roundabouts. These things do, cliche, generally tend to level themselves out in some way. Mick McCarthy probably doesn't feel like that at the moment, but Chelsea have had as many good decisions in their favour as bad decisions, I'm sure, as the season has gone on, and it does seem to even out.
But it is, I do think it's an interesting point that as soon as that game finished at Molineux, a lot of people were saying it's because it was Frank Lampard, the referee. You know, he's a nice guy and he has a reputation for being a gentleman and one of the game's, you know, good guys. And he did regret, you could see instantly he regretted what he had done. And I think that's really fascinating. Does that affect do you feel, Ollie, that referee was influenced by the fact it was, you said it doesn't matter whether it's Frank Lampard or not. I think it probably did, you know.
Well, I think all sorts of things affect a referee's mindset in these situations. You know, how many minutes are on the clock, bizarrely, seems to affect referees sometimes. The scale of the game, sometimes, you know, if it's a showpiece, they don't want to send people off.
You wouldn't want to spoil the game, would you, Ollie?
Well, exactly. But
according to Howard Webb.
I'm sure if that was, you know, we could name sort of four or five players in the Premier League who are sort of regarded by referees and public alike as bad boys. If we talk about Joey Barton and Balotelli and that kind of person, if they did it, then I'm sure they would be sent off. If Lampard and perhaps two or three others who are seen as squeaky clean did it, then, you know, it might be considered more accidental. Maybe that's just a human response from a referee. But even Lampard himself said that he was very, very lucky not to get sent off, and that's the kind of honest guy he is, yeah. Which perhaps
underlines the point.
Exactly.
Julian, there was this tall blonde forward playing on his own up front for Chelsea, and it was funny because when I saw the lineup and then I watched the match of the day, they had it as like a 4-3-3, but I was only watching on television, and it's sometimes difficult to know what the formation is, but it was very unclear sort of what they were playing. It certainly wasn't 4-3-3. It looked to me like Torres was the guy furthest forward, but insisted on coming back all the time. Mata was lodged somewhere behind him. And then you kind of had sort of four midfielders. And it seemed, did it work? I mean, I thought Torres liked it and was a lot more comfortable.
Yeah. Do you remember
we did a podcast early on in the season where Villas-Boas played them in 4-2-3-1 formation. And we said, you know, Mata looks good in a central position where he's a bit free, can do, you know, he can go wherever he wants, he can play behind the striker. At the time it was Torres or Drogba, or, you know, whoever, but that looks good. That looks much better than their 4-3-3 where they lack sometimes rhythm and creativity. And I think yesterday was good. I think it worked. And I don't know why it took him so long to Villas-Boas to, you know, to drop that 4-3-3 and just try something else.
He tried something else against Liverpool in the Carling Cup and it backfired horribly.
In
that's
what?
Why he went back.
In what?
The Carling Cup.
What's that?
The League Cup.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
You're right. But I think that's definitely the way forward for Chelsea. Just forget about that 4-3-3 with your, you know, with your wing. You know, just try something else.
The problem is, Ollie, if you do that, then you can't really put. There's no place for Daniel Sturridge on the pitch unless you play Sturridge as your lone striker, which is maybe what you should be doing.
I was about to butt in and say that, you know, 4-4-1-1 will probably suit Torres and Mata more, but I don't think Chelsea's midfield players are suited particularly to 4-4-2. You look at Morelos, Lampard, Ramirez, Romeo. Even there's players who are suited to certain roles in a 4-3-3, and that is why I think that has been the favoured formation this season. Well, that along with the fact that it's Villas-Boas' favoured formation anyway, and he's very sort of beholden to that way of playing, and has had great success with it. But I still think it may be the challenge for Torres and the challenge for Mata for the rest of the season might well be to fit into that 4-3-3. I think it might have worked yesterday, but let's be honest, it wasn't the most tremendous performance, was it? So although it might have worked yesterday, I think they'll still revert to 4-3-3 more often than not.
Alison, there was a point when I think they were still drawing in the game, and Romelu Lukaku was on the bench because everybody was injured. You know, basically, Anelka's off in China and Kalou's hurt and Sturridge is hurt and Drogba's suddenly hurt and, you know, a lot of boo-boos all of a sudden. And I'm like, oh, look, I was so excited. I'm like, here's Lukaku. We can finally see him on the pitch again. I feel like, you know, he's played a couple times, I think, in the Premier League this year. What's the, does he smell? Like, he's a 20 million pound forward. What did he do? Get evaluated every day in training? Like, oh, well, he's not ready. I mean, if you were Roman Abramovich, then obviously you'd be a man. But also, when you kind of, would you go and sort of knock on the door of Ron Gurley or...
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Or Villas-Boas and say, hey, what's the deal with this large man who's here? Why is he here?
His prime specimen is what I think you're trying to say, Kev.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he looks a real athlete. He really does. So, yeah, you would need to know what's going on.
He's like a bigger, stronger, more intellectual version of Didier Drogba.
Yeah. And he's had some glimpses on the pitch which have looked very promising. His debut was. And then he's looked slightly lost. But then you probably would if you joined in a sort of blaze of wow, I could be the new Didier, who is his hero. And then you don't see a lot of action. But I think it's a very good question to ask. And I don't know why it's fallen apart for him, because I think he looked like he might be a real hit this season. He might yet be, but it's not doing his confidence any good, is it?
Ollie, we spent all this time about talking about Andy Carroll and what's wrong with Andy Carroll, why didn't he play more, whatever. Lukaku is, you know, not quite as under the radar as Julian's friend Abu Dhabi, but pretty close to it.
Yeah, I thought it was bizarre that they signed him and then didn't release Anelka or Drogba or someone like that in the summer. Obviously, Anelka's gone now, and Drogba has gone off to Africa, and well, will be going off to Africa to play in the Cup of Nations. And you'd expect Lukaku to get some game time, but I think it's terribly ill-judged to take a guy who's playing regularly and developing at an incredibly quick rate at a club like Anderlecht, and then just take him out of that environment, put him in effectively the reserves at Chelsea. There's a problem that Premier League teams have in terms of how they develop players who are not quite ready for the first team or not quite ready for first team squad, because reserve team football is seen as a bit of a joke. I mean, Lukaku, I worry for a player like Lukaku, because losing that momentum that he had, losing that experience that he had, and losing the regular first team football that he had at Anderlecht, it can be really damaging for a player of that age. I think he needs to be, you know, for them to have thought it was worth signing him this season rather than say next summer or January or whatever, they need to be playing him at least, you know, at least periodically.
Or leave him at Anderlecht. I think that was that was the thought anyway, that he might. Chelsea could say, yeah, he's ours, but we're not going to be able to give him enough time.
Alex, when they signed him from PSV, that kind of stuff happens all the time.
So he should maybe be there anyway.
Well, since we're at it and we're piling on De Villa's boys, I knew what would happen after that goal, when sort of the Chelsea players, or some Chelsea players, formed a human daisy chain and hunted him down for that for the big group hug. And I knew that, you know, when John Terry sort of arrived late and veered away and Frank Lampard was nowhere to be seen, I mean, I assume people would immediately go and speculate. You're laughing, Julian. You think it's funny. Is this fair speculation? Is it fair for people to look at this and say, oh, look, that must mean that Lampard and Terry don't actually like Villas-Boas, and, you know, the daisy chain is formed by all his little pets, David Luiz and Meireles and Romeo and whatever.
Yeah, Ramirez. Yeah, Terry was just so funny. So he went to the touchline, and, you know, you could see him running there. He didn't even, like, go near the other players of Villas-Boas. Just went there, had a little stop, and then went back to his position. I think it was brilliant. I don't know if they don't like him or not. It's just from what I've heard, there's a bit of tension. Obviously, some players are not happy at all by the way he coaches, by the way he deals with the players, and loads of things like that. They didn't really appreciate the "you have to come and celebrate with us" sort of story that we had, you know, late back in December. But what's funny is that you have to look at the players who came towards him after that Ramirez goal, and the one who didn't, obviously. And I think that probably talks a lot.
Do you have to do that, Alison? Do we have to, or are we just being mean and causing a muckraking by doing it?
Absolutely not. I think that moment encapsulates all the problems that AVB has. He's trying to develop a squad, and yet he inherited a really good squad. So it's not like he came into a team that were rubbish and had loads of rubbish old players, so everyone's on his side and realises he's got to clear it out. He's dealing with big egos, players who've still got a lot to give, who do not appreciate a 34-year-old telling them what's right, what's wrong, when they've been doing it for so many years at the same club. And the fact that there was a split in who decided to go to him, it was mainly Portuguese-speaking, wasn't it, which isn't a surprise. But it's the players that he favours, on the whole, the younger players. That to me encapsulates that must be a dressing room that is not united. It's not a club that's united, and it's not a club that's wholly behind what he's trying to do. And how can you be behind? If you're a player and someone comes in and it's clear they want to change the way you play and re-energise, make it a more youthful team, you're not going to be on board with that, are you? If you're 33 years old, you're not going to say, yeah, absolutely, I think the team should be packed full of 20-year-olds. So it's logical that there's going to be a rift, and it, you know, that has made the cut for the most cringe-inducing moments of 2012 already.
Right. This week was, and perhaps I need you to shed some actual news light on this, because on our debate, I want to talk about Wayne Rooney. And on Box, though, there's a report that came out that the reason that Rooney and Darren Gibson were dropped from the squad for the match against Blackburn on Sir Alex's birthday, which obviously they lost, had to do with Rooney and Gibson and Johnny Evans, who I believe is injured anyway, and their wives going out the night of Boxing Day and then talking about it in training the next day, and Sir Alex's spies finding out about it and him getting angry, and so he gets dropped for this game. Now, there was a statement from United afterwards which said, no, that's not true. He was dropped because he's hasn't trained well and isn't fit and he's getting basically being rested, whatever. Do we know what the truth is, Ollie? Like, what is the official line here? Have they admitted it now? Because they've gone and fined him, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think if you look at exactly what Ferguson said on Saturday afternoon after the match, he said that Rooney hadn't trained well. Now, people interpreted that as meaning he was injured. I think Ferguson probably, he couched it that way because it was, for once, slightly truthful. And, you know, the issue was that he supposedly hadn't trained well, having had this night out on Boxing Day. That is the implication. The implication from various sources at United is that it was not a question of the night out. It was a question of not being in a great position to train the next morning. And given that it was basically a thing where they were just doing a few laps of the pitch and a few stretches, it must have been quite a night, mustn't it?
Exactly. Well, I want to throw this out to, because I think it's interesting the way Sir Alex handled it. Cynical me says, okay, I need to be seen. I need to crack the whip a bit here. I need to be seen to be punished. Are we playing next? Oh, look, it's those chumps at Rovers. We're at home. It's my birthday. It's almost like playing a Steve Bruce team. Easy. We're going to get the 3 points, and that's done. And this is a perfect opportunity. You know, I could play my son Darren. In fact, no, the other son, the one who doesn't play football, I could play him up front, and we would still win this game. And obviously, we know that didn't go according to plan. Do you think that's what happened, and that maybe if had they been playing Barcelona in a Champions League semi-final next? You know, if we're all in agreement, then Rooney probably wouldn't have been dropped for this game.
No chance.
Definitely.
Exactly. But here's my question. And we were talking about with our producer, Chris. So he gets fined a week's wages and he gets dropped. And the result is ultimately it hurts United's teammates. It hurts United fans. It hurts Rooney, obviously, in the wallet to some degree, although probably not that much. It hurts United's shareholders and owners, of course, which... because nobody really gives a toss about. But is there a better way that he would have punished him? I mean, if you were in charge, Austin, is there something you could have done?
You mean that would have play been... him to play him?
Yeah. But let me put it this way. Let me throw this out to you, right? If instead of fining him a week's wages, which obviously doesn't really impact his lifestyle at all, and instead of dropping him, which hurts the team, what if he had said, hey, Wayne, your next day off... you're going to go and you're going to do 10 hours of community service. Yeah, at some kind of, you know, you go to a charity, a soup kitchen, old people, whatever. And then at the end, after you do that...
Don't let him loose with old people.
but like actually do something useful, something in the community with kids and something. And then maybe after you do that, you can decide you take your week's wage that I'm going to fine you. And instead of keeping it in house and paying it out to the Glazers as more dividend, you donate it to a charity. But we actually educate you, not like those just club sponsored charity things where like sort of, you know, which are important and worthwhile, of course, where you just kind of troop in and troop out. But let him go, three different types of charities that might be of interest to him. Let him go, give up his own time.
This is dangerous ground.
Why?
You can't turn doing charitable work into a punishment. Footballers, we're always being told that footballers do it all the time anyway, and it's just never reported. And if you do dig a little bit, they are always turning up at hospitals and places and do their bit. And you're not allowed to make an individual do something out of the work environment that they don't want to do anyway, and you can't possibly couch it as a punishment that you're going into a community centre and helping out when they're short staffed. That undermines the whole idea of what charity and what people who have lots of dosh and a privileged lifestyle do when they're trying to give back. I mean, that's, you can't do that. And actually, to rewind, I disagree that if they'd been playing Barcelona that he would have, he probably would have played Rooney, but I don't think he should. Isn't the point that he turned up for training and at training he was not up to it? If you then pick a player who everyone can see is not taking training seriously and isn't physically up for it, then you, down the line, you're creating all sorts of problems, and you're creating Rooney this monster for whom the normal rules do not apply. So I think he did exactly the right thing not to play him on the basis that he wasn't performing well in training. What I would have done differently is I would not have allowed him to be in the stadium in a box watching the game, which, because United subsequently lost the game, it gave him more sort of Jesus complex status. I would have said, either you're on the subs bench or you're not at the ground. You're talking to a sports psychologist and you're telling him why you feel it's a laugh to not train properly. That's what I would have done.
Okay, in any case, you wouldn't have let him do any charity work. Ollie, is my like, instead of fining people all the time, having them do some community service idea, is it really just horrible because you can't force people to do good things?
I was slightly sort of perplexed by that, you know, the idea that you can't do community work as a punishment, or can't be seen as doing community work as a punishment. Is that not what community service, for example, is about?
Yes, that's Joey Barton.
But I mean, I guess if we're talking about sort of internal sanctions by an employer, then you know, maybe different rules do apply. But I don't know. I think the point you made right at the start is the right one, that if they were playing Barcelona, if they were playing Manchester City for a title decider, this wouldn't have happened. He would not have been left out of the 18. It just wouldn't have happened. Ferguson is incredibly pragmatic, although people see him as this dictator that is completely uncompromising. He's shown down the years that he is compromising. You know, he gave Beckham quite a lot of slack for many years. He gave Keane more slack than most for a long time while it was in both their interests. You know, people like York and Barthez have found that they were given a lot of slack at one point in their career, and then once performances dropped, you know, the same privileges and liberties were no longer applicable. Rooney and Ferguson have an interesting relationship. It's tense at times, and it's incredibly trusting at others. But it's I think this is a situation where Ferguson thought he could get away with it, and that he could make a point by finding these players and leaving them out. When in fact, I thought the performance against Blackburn was so bad that they even missed Darren Gibson. Never mind Rooney.
But Ollie, had they been playing Barcelona or Manchester City instead of Blackburn Rovers, would Rooney have gone out late and turned up for training and not given it his best shot? I mean, you know, these things all go together, don't they?
It was 5 days before. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like he was taking liberties on the eve of a game. It was 5 days before. It was on the night of their Boxing Day game. They didn't have a game for 5 days. I think players generally think that in that situation they can afford to go out and let their hair down. And I'm sure, in certain circumstances, a manager would have completely turned a blind eye, or not even thought it was worth turning a blind eye.
Julian, what's an appropriate way of dealing with this? I suppose union rep Allison doesn't like my forced community service idea. But, I mean, I just wonder, with fines, I mean, if it's maximum 2 weeks' wages, and 2 weeks' wages to somebody making 50 or 100 grand a year is a lot of money. 2 weeks' wages to somebody making 100 grand a week probably doesn't really make much difference whatsoever.
There's another 50 week in the year. To cash in anyway. So
is there a better way to punish?
You know what? I would tell him to replace the kit man and arrive at the training ground every day at 8 and wash the training kits and the shirt and clean the boots for a whole week, and he probably would hate it because he's never done it ever, and maybe that'd teach him. Now, I don't know, it's always hard in those situations.
Would you do that? You'd have that?
Yeah,
that
I've said, Rooney, go and wash, clean the boots and wash the kids and stuff like that. He would love it, and Colin would love it as well.
Yeah, well, he'd refuse to do it, and then they'd be back where they started, and there'd be a
dispute. What do you mean he'd refuse to do it?
There'd be a dispute.
Then he'd get a football boot in his head or something.
Ollie, is it plausible that somebody could just refuse a direct instruction from Sir Alex Ferguson?
It's plausible, but I wouldn't. I wouldn't advise it for any United player, even Wayne Rooney. I like Julian's kit man idea, but my only concern with that would be that it would inflate the ego of United's current kit man, who I've actually seen signing autographs in the past.
Oh. Who's the kit man?
You just would not want to give him the pleasure of ordering Wayne Rooney around for a week.
Can you tell us his name, the United kit man?
It's Albert. I think it's Albert Morgan. But he actually appeared in an advert, a Nike advert, which I think might have been an METV only advert. But it was apparently as bad as it sounds. But it's I've seen him signing autographs.
I'm going to leave you with this thought. One of my wishes of 2012 is that maybe the people like the kit man and the tea lady and people like that at United, shouldn't we all be saying, look, they're the real stars?
Yes.
Albert Morgan, we salute you. All right, how about some quick hits? The Football Association released 115 pages of written reasons in the Suarez Ever case on New Year's Eve. Allison, I know that, like me, you spent the early hours of 2012 reading every single line of that report. Any reason to believe that the 8-game ban will not stand on appeal?
The overwhelming view is that it's that the incentive now is that no one will dare to utter a racist remark on the pitch because the punishment for Suarez is so enormous, and for that reason, people are saying to Liverpool, leave it alone. It's a great thing to do. It's only a great incentive if it's true, if Suarez really did say all that he's supposed to have said in his appeal. So I would urge Liverpool to be brave instead of being told that they're impeding the progress of anti-racism by considering appeal. They should still consider it, and if there are good legal reasons for doing so, I think they have a right to.
I'd also remind public opinion that Evra himself, according to the report, says he doesn't consider Suarez a racist, just somebody who said something inappropriate, and also that people are entitled to due process. Harry Redknapp talks to Radio 4, imagine that, Radio 4, and says managing England would be boring. Ollie, he's still going to take the job, right? Or would a third place finish for Spurs change his mind?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in what he says. I mean, it's seen as this very, very privileged position, and it's one that English managers haven't been offered very often in recent years. But I think it would be a culture shock for somebody like Redknapp, who is a sort of dressing room man, training ground man, and I don't think he would necessarily like it that much. And I think the next England manager is going to have a very tough job. Spurs seem to be on the up, and I would think he would accept it if it was given, if the money was right. But I don't think it's that clear cut. He has to take it from England's point of view, maybe, but is it possible that he doesn't have to take it from his own point of view?
He should be a patriot. Joey Barton scores a goal and then gets himself sent off in QPR's 2-1 home defeat to Norwich. He then tweets about how the referee was conned. This is, for those who didn't see the incident, this is largely because he, there's all these previous with him and Bradley Johnson, the two of them having little hissy fits like two little queens. And then in midfield, he seems to strike Bradley Johnson, not very hard, and then he squares up to him. And amazingly, the referee and the linesman, they just kind of sit there and play goes on and on. And then sort of a few minutes later, they go and they send him off. Now, I had to go and sum this up for those who haven't seen this. I thought it was absolutely extraordinary. Julian, so are you buying Joey Barton's explanation? And is it clever for a player to tweet something like that so soon after the match?
Yeah, I think he got sent off for his reputation because I don't think the referee saw it. I don't think the linesman saw it. I think they had no clue what happened, really. And I don't even think he deserved a red card anyway. I think there's nothing wrong in him tweeting his opinions after the game, sooner or a bit more later. Although I think the Premier League will probably have a look at that Twitter thing and the players tweeting what they think, and if they criticise the referee, they probably will be fine, like the managers are fine when they criticise the referee after games on TV.
Gab, here's one for you. Paris Saint-Germain have a new manager. I know I probably should be asking Julien, not you, about this, but tell me, how will Ancelotti get on?
I don't know. I like to think, and I'm very biased on this one, but I think he's going to do very well. He came to Chelsea, dealt with a tremendous amount of rubbish that was thrown at him. Lost his assistant halfway through a reserve team game. Had one of his players shoot an intern. Had the captain threatening to leave when he arrived. They didn't buy him anybody except for the end where they bought him the wrong people. And he finished first and second in 2 years, and you know, plus 71 goal difference. In his first season, I think that's all pretty good, and I think there's potential at Paris Saint-Germain. They are first already on the table, which is going to make a big difference. I don't expect too many changes early on, maybe in the summer. That's all we've got time for this week, but you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, hopefully not too much gossip, your analysis. I do my web chats as well, as does Ollie. You can follow us on Twitter. We're all on there, so let's call it a day. Bye-bye.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.